Radio with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11 on The Dirtbag, host Glenn Anderson and guest Jim Gilbert discuss gardening in brutally hot weather, honeybee swarming, and Jim's garden travels to Russia and Korea. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. Not a current member? You can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking donate. That's the evening newscast. We'll be on again tomorrow at 5. Good night, Jenna.
Night, Kanan. Good night, Sequoyna.
Night, Sequoyna.
Good night.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
I am Jenka Soderberg. I'm here in the studio today with Naomi Cedar, who is a part of the PyCon convention that's been going on here in Portland, as well as TransCode. And I wonder if you could first talk to us a little bit about the conference that you've been a part of this week, this PyCon.
Sure. I mean, PyCon is the largest gathering of Python programmers in the world. It's largely North America-based, but we have people from pretty much everywhere in the world coming to join us. It's about 3,500 participants for the main conference. Before the main conference, we had a couple of days of special tutorials, other special gatherings. We had a summit talking about the Python language itself. We had a summit about education. Then 3 days of the conference with 95 talks and various other gatherings, open spaces, kind of a lot going on. And then yesterday, today, and on through Sunday, we have the coding sprints, which are various software projects gathering together to work together in person. In this age of the internet, working face-to-face is a rarity, and since everybody's together for the conference, they're doing that, and I'm one of the organizers of that sprint section.
Let's talk a little bit about Python and how PyCon, at least, seems to be different from other tech conferences, at least in the area of gender diversity and inclusion. It seems like there's really been a big effort to kind of counter the overarching narrative about programmers being a largely male phenomenon.
We have worked a lot in that regard. Several years ago, if you would have gone to a PyCon conference, it would have indeed been almost all male. These days, we had 40% of the speakers were women. The Python Software Foundation, which is the body that sort of is kind of the governing body for the language, our board, of which I was reelected to a second term, is a majority women, as it happens. A lot of people worked very hard in terms of outreach to get more people who were not the default to submit talks. So, you know, the PyCon conference itself is rather unusual and sort of held up as a model for expanding the representation and inclusion of different people.
Well, and I understand the language Python itself is named after Monty Python, so it can't be a group that takes itself too seriously.
In general, that is true. Yes, that's and references to Monty Python are still found in the documentation in terms of like examples or things like that. So yeah, there is a certain sense of humor there.
Excellent. And as far as bringing kind of non-traditional people into programming, you yourself have been part of an organization called TransCode, and I wonder if you could talk about that. You held an event recently?
Sure. So Transcode is a hack day that is focused on issues involving the transgender and non-binary communities. I and a woman named Jessica Rose founded this in London about a year and a half ago. So right at this moment, we've had three events all in the UK where we get anywhere from 30 to 60, 70. I think the last one was about 75 people who come together for a day. And it's about building community. It's about it's a hack day, but it's not competitive. We just have people get together and in groups work on things that would concern the trans community. We had something called Lou Fine, which was the UK's version of refuge restrooms, a safe place to pee. We had things dealing with basically all aspects of trans experience. So, we're hoping to do one of those in Chicago coming up in the fall, maybe. We're set to do another one at the UK Python Conference in the fall. Talking to a couple of people in Zurich. And since we've been here, there's some interest in whether or not we could possibly get one going here in the Portland area too. So we would love to expand if we can find people who are willing to step up and kind of adopt the model and do it anywhere.
I saw something at least similar going on in San Francisco that is a group that meets on a pretty regular basis.
Right. And, the roots of Transcode go back to Courtney Ziegler's Trans Hack, which was first done in Oakland in 2013. And I went to that as a mentor. And that was kind of the inspiration. We're sort of a much smaller, it's kind of less organized version to the ones that he did, but then TransHack continues to be a speaker series and various things like that as well. So we're very much in that tradition.
And you mentioned that in your hack day, you were working on an app, the Lou Finder. I mean, we've been talking about that on KBOO here. It's just how ridiculous it is that people are having to fight for the right to have a bathroom.
True, and that's absolutely true. And of course, some people will go ahead and do civil disobedience and make a statement by doing that. But quite often, trans people just really have enough other problems that we would just like a place to go in peace, wherever that might be. So yeah, it is kind of a sad thing that we have to do that.
And here in Portland now, the city of Portland has announced that their restrooms are gender neutral. So at least you could go to a city building and add those to the Lou Finder.
It's a good thing. Absolutely.
Is there an app like that for other cities outside of London?
Well, the one that is most commonly referred to is called Refuge Restrooms. And I think it's actually been through a couple of different generations and things like that. I believe that it's being actively developed still. So, and I, the last I heard, they were actively looking for people to contribute to their database. The app is there, can be downloaded, can be used, but of course, it's only as good as the data that people put into it. So, for all sorts of things like that, it's fine to make an app, but then you need people to provide the data. Is this a good place? Is it not? Whatever.
Does it use OpenStreetMaps?
As I recall, yes. I think both the project we did in the UK and Refuge Restrooms were both using OpenStreetMaps, the last I heard. Although my memory is faulty in my old age, but I'm pretty sure they were.
So, and people who are listening might not be familiar with, I'm talking about OpenStreetMaps, which is kind of an open source version of Google Maps, and it's a member contribute, or just anyone can contribute to the map, and you yourself, Naomi, are involved in open source programming and Python. And I wonder if you could tell our listeners a little bit just about that, if they're not familiar with open source and free software.
Well, yes. I mean, I think it's a very odd notion until you actually get involved in this community. The idea behind open source is that people contribute code or perhaps in some cases data, whatever it is, freely and license it to other people to change and modify and improve. And this you know, you, people wonder, why would you give away your programming time to this sort of community? And in fact, people get a lot of satisfaction out of doing this. In some cases, companies will pay people now to work on open source software because, in fact, open source now drives so much of what we do online on the web. Many companies are now moving to use open source solutions, and then they have to give back to that to keep those things going. And of course, the very license says that if you change it and are going to release the code, you must release the basic original source code so that other people can modify it and do the same. So even a company like Microsoft is now in the open source business, which is, you know, back in the day, they hated the notion of open source, but it's the way the world is going.
And how about Apple?
Apple, I don't think, has done so much. So I think maybe there's still a frontier there.
And so we're working in an industry that is, like we talked about, not very gender diverse, and but yet the Python community is. And I wonder, is that a growing trend in the industry?
Well, I think it is. I mean, I speak a lot about issues with diversity and community. And part of the issue is that, depending upon which numbers you take and how you figure it out, the world's population is only 7, 8, 9%, under 10% white males out of the world's population. We have an enormous shortage in the tech business of talented people. We need more people. We need more good minds. It's absolute insanity to ignore 90% of the world's population when we need these people to help out. And, you know, also, I think there's an increasing appreciation that the more different people you have looking at a problem, the better, the more robust your solution will be. Probably you will get there faster. There are just all sorts of arguments for diversity that I think people are starting to see.
Yeah, and I wonder what it would mean for the languages themselves. Like when I look into the hardware on a computer and see that there's a slave and a master drive, it just makes me wonder who came up with that terminology.
Well, I mean, you can guess who. There is a move to fix some of those things. I believe the Django project now is actually sort of changing terms around like that so that they're not quite as loaded as they once were. And, you know, on the other hand, speaking of language, I know that Python is one of the few that will let you use any alphabet system that you can get into Unicode. So, in fact, if you want to use something like Arabic that goes in the other direction, you can, you know, from right to left, you can do that and things like that. So I think that those are things that also need to happen to increase diversity.
If people want to get involved, maybe somebody is listening, maybe a young woman or a young trans person that thinks they could get involved in programming, is it accessible to them? Are there specific places that they should be looking in order to get involved?
I think that a good place to start in the Python world, which is what I know, is to look for local meetups. So there is a local PyLadies chapter. There are local Python groups, and that's a place to make contact with some other people and see what you can do and how you can fit in. And as I say, the Python community is in general.
And is that something that years of training? And is the training cost prohibitive?
Well, so in general, to get involved, again, speaking from the Python community, they run all sorts of things to help newcomers get involved. There are things, as I say, the Django Girls workshops are for people who've never coded before. PyLadies will run things for newcomers. Regular Python things will too.
And if people are interested in that PyLadies, there is a website, PyLadies.com. It's PyLadies.com, and you can look for the Portland location if you are listening here in the Portland area. And if people want to find out more about Transcode and about you, is there a website? Do you have a blog?
So there are a couple of things that you can do. You can follow us on Twitter. We're trans_code. And I personally am Naomi, N-A-O-M-I, Cedar, C-E-D-E-R, on Twitter. You can email us at info@trans-code.org. We also are, we have a blog at trans.tech. So we actually got one of the new .tech domains. So we're happy about that.
Excellent. And so keep your eye on that blog, trans.tech, to find out about a possible trans code meetup in the Portland area.
And if anybody is interested in contributing to that, please, you know, go there, find our information and let us know. We'd love to have people join us as we think about that.
Well, thank you so much. Again, my guest has been Naomi Cedar with TransCode and has been a part of the PyCon convention, the Python convention going on here in Portland. And that is the Python programming language, which is an open source programming language. Thank you, Naomi, for joining us on KBOO.
Thank you.
This is Jinka Soderberg for KBOO Radio.
Does your employer have a matching gift program? Many companies offer a dollar-for-dollar matching charitable contribution for donations you make to KBOO. The impact of your gift may be doubled or possibly tripled. Participating companies are also matching gifts made by retirees and or spouses. Matching gifts are a great way for you to maximize your membership dollars. Check with your company's human resources or accounting departments to find out if your employer matches charitable contributions, then request a matching gift form. For more information on companies making matching gifts, go to kboo.fm/employer-matching.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Lost Boys of Portlandia, a film premiere gala and fundraiser for Outside the Frame, Tuesday, June 7th at 7 p.m. at Revolution Hall in Portland.